Quick disclaimer, information in this podcast is for general informational purposes only and is not intended to be treated as medical advice. Always consult with your healthcare team before making changes to your diet, lifestyle, supplementation, or medication.
The conversation that you're about to hear is designed to empower you to take charge of your health through education, informed decision-making, and communication. Please remember that you should always consult with your medical doctor before making changes to your medication.
Welcome to Type 2 Diabetes Talk, the place where we chat about what really works to treat type 2 diabetes and prediabetes naturally with nutrition and lifestyle. If you're looking to optimize blood sugar and A1C, lose weight, reduce medications, and improve your overall health, this is the place to be. Now, here's your host, type 2 diabetes nutrition specialist, Dr. Jetta.
Hello, wonderful people. Dr. Jetta here, and welcome back to Type 2 Diabetes Talk. I know that besides lowering blood sugar and A1C, one of the other important goals for many of our members and subscribers is to try to avoid, reduce, or get off medications. But navigating this process can sometimes be tricky. And that's why I'm thrilled to welcome a special guest to the show today, Susan Robotti from MedShadow, who is going to join me in a conversation about empowerment and about taking control of your health in ways you might not have thought possible. So welcome to the show, Sue.
Well, thank you, Dr. Jetta. I'm glad to be here.
It's so great to have you here, and I'm really looking forward to what's bound to be a very interesting and helpful conversation for our listeners. So before we get started, I thought you might be able to share with our listeners more about your journey and the mission of MedShadow.
Thank you. I'd be glad to. I'd like to emphasize at the beginning that I'm not a doctor. I'm a person who's had a medical journey like so many others. Before I was ever born, my mother was prescribed and took a drug called diethylstilbestrol. It's DES is what it's called. It was given to maybe 5 or 10 million women in the US, and it was given to pregnant women worldwide in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. The drug was the very first synthetic estrogen, and it was the very first endocrine disruptor that was introduced into the ecosphere. What it meant was pregnant women were given massive amounts of this synthetic estrogen, which is much higher dosages than their bodies could ever have absorbed or produced on their own. And the children were, some of the children, an unknown percentage, were born with some physical abnormalities, quite often usually having to do with their fertility organs. It happened to both sons and daughters, but it also created a higher risk of cancer, a particular type of very rare cancer in the DES daughters. It was a cervical vaginal cancer called CCA, and it's the only reason we actually were able to tie a bunch of different symptoms of DES exposure to what happened is because of this cancer. So there's a very small percentage got it, but then they started tracking it and finding out what DES did. And in my case, which is not unusual, it caused infertility. I would never be able to have children. Quite often, as in my case, fertility organs were malformed. Other people had tilted uteruses, T-shaped uteruses, boys had tumors. There was 40 years of research has gone into this, and they found that because it's an endocrine disruptor, it carried on to the next generation also, and perhaps further. The mothers themselves had a high rate of breast cancer because of all the estrogen in their body, presumably. I found out at puberty that I would never be able to have children, and that has a lot of repercussions on the rest of your life. But I went through my life, I got married, we decided not to adopt. But all of a sudden, in the 19th year of our marriage, we found ourselves guardians of a 12-year-old boy, our nephew, who just needed another place to live. Ultimately, it was a great experience. But when he came, the school said, he's ADHD. He needs to be on Ritalin. And this went back and forth with us saying, we're just bad parents. We don't know what we're doing. Give us some time. And they said, no, he must be on drugs. So I took him to a doctor who quickly volunteered to give him Ritalin and said, don't worry, if this dosage doesn't work, we'll double it. And if that doesn't work, we'll give him Wellbutrin or Adderall, there are other drugs, we'll get him under control. And with my experience on the long-term side effect of DES, I was not comfortable giving a drug that is designed to interact with your brain to a child I thought was casually diagnosed and potentially had other issues. Ultimately, we were in a position where we could hire a true diagnostician who did several weeks of testing and found out that while maybe he had a mild ADHD, he really did have other issues. He had some learning disabilities. He had displacement to a different home. It was a lot of what we thought. And I realized then that DES was only one example of all the ways that we overuse drugs, we depend on drugs, we use them instead of fixing ourselves, instead of moving towards health and becoming whole and well, we instead mask the symptoms with medicines. And those medicines all have side effects. So what I decided to do a few years ago was to start MedShadow. You can find us at medshadow.org. And I called it MedShadow because it's med for medicine and shadow because drugs will follow you. And we give as complete health information as we can on medicines and alternative lifestyles and the use of drugs. Most everyone is going to need to use drugs at some point. But we have an emphasis on reminding you that there are side effects and costs to using drugs. And here are the side effects. Because we don't work with pharma, we don't accept pharmaceutical advertising or funding, we have no pressure to hide any side effects or hide any studies. So we give more complete information on the negative aspects of medicines.
Fantastic, Sue. And thanks for sharing your very personal and very impactful story. And importantly, the mission of MedShadow. I've worked with Sue over the years and it really is a fantastic site, not just in terms of discovering the truth about medication side effects, but also in discovering alternative treatment options for various different conditions. But look, coming back to this story, Sue, it's so incredible that, you know, you've gone through that with your mother and you've had these life-changing consequences on yourself. And then going through the ADHD with your nephew, you said it was your nephew. Yep.
Yes.
And like you say, the quick diagnosis and straight to med. So for our audience, I mean, I know that we've got people with prediabetes and type 2 diabetes and they get a diagnosis and that often leads straight to the meds. And drugs are being pushed right off the bat without even consulting with the person, even though in the medical care guidelines, we hear things like person-centered care. Drugs are being pushed every time then at subsequent appointments and doctors aren't encouraging people or supporting people to use things like diet and lifestyle and they're hesitant to deprescribe. I mean, what are your thoughts around all that stuff?
Well, there's a lot of over-reliance on medicines. 48% of US citizens have taken a prescription drug within the past 30 days. 28% have taken 3 prescription drugs in the past 30 days. And if you're a senior, if you're 65 or older, you're taking 5 plus meds. There's a lot of over-reliance on medicines when, as you say, lifestyle, food choices, exercise. There was a study in Journal of the American Medical Association. It compared the Mediterranean diet, compared it to using PPIs, prescription level PPIs, to manage GERD. And they found that 63% of those who used the Mediterranean diet found that they had a significant reduction in symptoms, whereas those on PPIs had a 54% reduction. And those on the Mediterranean diet felt a 40% better. And those on PPIs felt 20% better. So it was very clear that the Mediterranean diet helped more people than did the PPIs. That's true for so many cases.
Right. We see this in many trials in prediabetes and type 2 diabetes too, that diet and nutrition have a much greater impact on multiple outcomes compared with medications. What we're hearing too, we've talked about ADHD, GERD, and here we've got prediabetes and type 2 diabetes. I mean, over-medicalization, I think, of health conditions and that over-reliance on medication is rampant, isn't it?
It is. There's a statistic that's quoted that is adverse reaction to prescription drugs is the fourth leading cause of death. That's a hard thing to measure exactly what that is, because there are also drug interactions, drug-to-drug interactions. There are drug-to-herb interactions, but drugs are putting us into the hospital. Drugs are causing harm and death.
Look, I saw a paper, Sue, published in 2021 and assessing data from 2017 through to 2019. And it found that diabetes medications in particular among people 65 plus years are one of the most common drug types for hospital emergency visits. And surprisingly, an estimated 38.6% of those ER visits for medication harm require subsequent hospital visits. And just to be clear for our listeners, this is not abuse of medication. This is just people taking their medications for therapeutic purposes. I mean, we don't expect this stuff, Sue.
We do know for sure that there are a million people going into the ER each year because of adverse drug effects, with 250,000 of them being checked into the hospital for longer-term care because of that, which sounds like it's even worse in the diabetes community, which makes sense because it tends to be a little bit older in the diabetic community.
Yeah, I just think that it's surprising, I guess, for listeners probably to hear those kind of statistics because, again, often when we go to the doctor, we think, oh, the doctor's just looking after us. They're giving us the best treatment possible. But are they? I mean, and that is really the question, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, doctors don't seem to be that concerned about what they consider to be minor side effects. For example, there's been a huge controversy over this Sudafed cold remedy or decongestant that became popularly known that you could turn it into the drug meth. When the FDA realized that it was a very useful drug and people were used to being able to buy it over the counter, which means without a prescription. So what they did was they put it behind the counter so that you could still buy it without a prescription, but you had to walk up to the counter and ask the pharmacist for Sudafed or Sudafedrin. At which point the pharmacist would ask for an ID and write down that you were buying it and you're only allowed to buy maybe 2 boxes. So the manufacturer of Sudafed realized this was going to depress sales a lot. People don't want to do that. So they put out something called Sudafed PE. It's not Sudafedrin at all. Phenylephrine, which is a drug that has been known among doctors for a while, and finally the FDA concluded it is completely useless for decongestant. So any drug that you're using for decongestion over the counter that you're swallowing is useless. So why does the FDA not pull that off the market? It is a drug that has significant side effects. It can cause dizziness. It can cause sleeplessness. It can cause headaches, among other things, and commonly does, which is tolerable if you're getting a benefit from it, but you're not. But the FDA put out a statement saying, it's safe to take it. We don't know if we're going to pull it off the market. And I understand the FDA's hesitation. Phenylephrine, this PE, I'll just call it PE, has been integrated into all the multi-symptom cold and flu remedies. Any of them that is a multi-symptom will have this PE for decongestion, and they'll all have to take it out when the FDA, they must, I hope, finally says, you have to take this off the shelf. It's not effective. Because even though doctors say those are minor side effects, if you're dizzy and fall, that's not a minor side effect. If you have a sleepless night and are driving the next day exhausted, that's not a minor side effect. So I thoroughly object to doctors saying it's easily tolerated when headaches, nausea, diarrhea, sleeplessness, irritability, all of those are well-tolerated drugs.
Just for everyone, Sue was air quoting when she said well-tolerated drugs. And it's such a great point because, again, when I was looking at another paper in diabetes medication specifically, is blurred vision and weakness are two of the most common side effects. And then even things like ear congestion and, again, that lightheadedness, they have side effects. They're not just minor side effects because they can have quite an impactful consequence in your life in an everyday setting. So I guess the message is don't overlook anything abnormal either if you develop something because it could be a side effect of your medication.
That's a very important point. If you're taking any medicine, even if you've been taking it a while and you have a new symptom, assume it's a side effect. Do not assume it's a new symptom. I mean, there are common drugs that you take that raise your blood pressure. Decongestants raise your blood pressure. Steroids, NSAIDs, which are Advil, Aleve, ibuprofen, naproxen, the antidepressant group of SNRIs will all raise your blood pressure. So you go to the doctor and suddenly you have high blood pressure. You may not have high blood pressure. Yeah, that could be just a side effect. But your doctor would give you a drug to manage that high blood pressure, which is called a drug cascade when you start giving. You're taking one drug and you're taking another drug for the side effect of that. Every time you go to the doctor, every single time, take with you at minimum a list of every medicine that you take, why you take it, how long you've been taking it, how much you take. I suggest people just take in the pill bottle with you. It's just easier. Show them the bottle. Take in your vitamins and your herbs. If you're taking an herbal supplement, that can interact with drugs. Your vitamins can interact with drugs. So your doctor needs to know everything that you're taking in order to help you avoid drug interactions.
Yeah, that's really important. Clinical inertia is rampant too. I know that we see it a lot in the research. You know, doctors are meant to review people's prescriptions and so forth every 3 to 6 months. But we know that is not happening at all, is it, Sue?
No. There's a movement called deprescribing that you touched on earlier. Very important, particularly when you're taking even one medicine. For example, many people in their 60s have a mild ischemic event, a slight stroke, a maybe stroke. And so they'll be put on Coumadin or another blood thinner. And the concept of it is to take it for a few years until it's clear that it's not a pattern. But doctors never take you off of that. It's very common for people to be on that Coumadin for the rest of their lives. And Coumadin is not a benign drug. It thins your blood, so it makes a small cut bleed much more easily. But it also means your internal organs might bleed a little. Your stomach lining is more likely to bleed if you have aspirin or NSAIDs, or God forbid, a brain bleed turns into even a worse disaster.
And of course, we don't want to see that type of stuff happen. And hearing you talk about this, Sue, it just emphasizes that we are the only ones who can take charge of our own health.
Are you ready to take charge of your diabetes health? Dr. Jetta's T2 diet program has been clinically proven in a randomized controlled trial to dramatically reduce A1C, weight, and medications in just 16 weeks. The T2 diet program will guide you step by step to discover an eating plan that feels natural and sustainable for you, and most importantly, works to get results. Learn more and join the program today at type2diabetestalk.com/programs.
I remember reading something on your site that said one thing's for sure, don't just take the drug. You need to ask questions. And I think that often people aren't encouraged to do that. And so it can be a kind of tricky gray area in a sense of communicating with your doctor about this. I mean, I know that I hear from people who are going well. Like, say, for example, everybody knows listening to this podcast that I've done the randomized control trial with the T2 diet program. And in 16 weeks, people incredibly reduced their A1C, I mean, much more powerfully than they could do with medications. And we did have doctors de-prescribing, certainly. I mean, 87% of people in the study reduced their medications in the 16 weeks, which is incredible, right, Sue? But look.
Yes, it's wonderful.
Yes, it is. Very proud of that. That's why I love it so much with the nutrition aspect in diabetes, because it is so powerful. But look, having those conversations can be tricky. I mean, what if someone's not supported by their doctor? How can they bring this up?
Honestly, it's very difficult. When a doctor suggests that you take a medicine and you say, what happens if I don't take that medicine? I've had a doctor put her hand on my arm and say, just take it, you'll feel better. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not taking it. I don't need that antibiotic for the flu. I know I've had the flu for 3 weeks, but I'm not taking that antibiotic because it's the flu. It's not going to work. And it's my doctor giving me what I know to be a wrong prescription. And ultimately, I left that doctor. Not everyone has the option of switching doctors. I live in New York City. There are doctors on every block. And I can just say, this isn't working out. I'm going to go to another doctor. I don't even have to say that to my doctor. I can just not show up and find another doctor. There are other people who don't have that option. But you're the one who's going to suffer if you're not getting the right care for you. So what you need to do is, every time your doctor prescribes a medicine for you, ask, what can I do instead of taking this medicine? Can I exercise? Can I walk? And let me point out, the doctor is not the only person you can turn to. In addition to your physician's assistant, your PA, the pharmacist can be your best friend. And I strongly advise people not to buy your medicines through the mail, and don't buy them from multiple places. Go to one local pharmacist, even if it's a chain pharmacist of one human being, and take in your medicines. Show them what you're doing so that when you've got a new prescription and you walk up to the counter, your pharmacist has all of your history, as your doctor did, but maybe your doctor overlooked something or is busy. Pharmacist is another set of professional trained eyes to say, ooh, that's not a good combination. Let me call the doctor at no cost to you. Let me call the doctor and see what I can do. But when you do go to the doctor, you want to say, why am I being prescribed this drug? Do I still need it? Can you substitute a less powerful drug? Am I taking the right amount at the right time? These are questions that should be asked over and over again.
Yeah, and I would say things like listening to this podcast, obviously Type 2 Diabetes Talk, where I'm always talking about nutrition and lifestyle and the power of that for pre-diabetes and type 2 diabetes, and seeing people reducing and getting off their meds all the time. And I would say to people, get educated and learn as much as you can about medication side effects. And like Sue said, definitely always ask the question, is there an alternative? Or before you go on the medication, go and do that research, right, Sue?
Exactly. When you have a symptom, start looking up and figuring out, you know, what your options are even before you walk into the doctor's office. And don't be in a rush. There are very few medical emergencies, and you'll know when they are. Be your own best advocate. Be the boss of your medicines. And say to your doctor, you know, I just am the kind of person who doesn't like to take medicines. What would acupuncture help me here? Would sauna help me here? Would traditional Chinese medicines help me here? Let your doctor think you're a little crazy. What does that matter?
I agree. And there are a lot of alternative therapeutic strategies out there that are highly effective. And the most powerful tool we have at our disposal is your diet and nutrition. So focus in on that, and you can get amazing results that can support you to avoid, reduce, or even stop your medications.
Exactly. Take as few drugs as you can. Be your own best advocate. Be the boss of your medicines. And do your best to stay healthy when you are healthy.
Well, thanks to Sue Ribotti from MedShadow today for coming on to share her wonderful wisdom about side effects and the mission of MedShadow. And it really is important to get this conversation out to more people. So please share this podcast with as many people as you can so that we can educate, inform, and empower more people to take charge of their health. So thank you so much, Sue, for coming to share with our listeners today.
Thank you, Dr. Jetta. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Yes, thank you. It certainly has. And this is only part one of my conversation with Sue. In the next episode, I'll be chatting with her again about her role on the advisory panel of the Federal Drug Administration. We're also going to be talking about Wegovy and Ozempic and some more surprising facts. It's all part of this conversation to empower you to take charge of your health through education, informed decision-making and communication. So please tune in next week. And I would also like to say that there will be information on our website at type2diabetestalk.com. If you're a person with pre or T2 diabetes, we'll have links in the show notes that you can use for your own medication research. Links to MedShadow and links to the articles I've written on this topic. Of course, if you're a member, you can find these resources inside the members' library. And if you're a health professional listening to this, you'll also be able to find research and resources on deprescribing medications, because that is something important for you to explore. And again, share these episodes to empower others far and wide on this very important topic. Have a great week. Dr. Jetta, over and out.
Thanks for tuning in to Type 2 Diabetes Talk. Please subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform. And for episode replays, episode notes, and more, visit type2diabetestalk.com. New episodes are available Tuesdays, 10 a.m. U.S. Eastern Time, or your time zone equivalent. Thanks again. We're truly grateful to be a part of your life and help make a real difference.